His Holiness Bhaktacharya Bhakti Rasamrita Swami Maharaj, respected guest of honor, Mr. Satpal Khattar, esteemed guests, ladies and gentlemen, a very warm welcome and good morning to all of you. This is the fourth Artha Forum event in Singapore. We're very happy to see many faces that have attended the event before. We're equally pleased to see many of you who are here for the first time. And I'd like to take this opportunity to thank all of you for your time today morning. We're extremely honored and privileged to have His Holiness Bhakti Rasamrita Swami Maharaj as the keynote speaker for today, and Mr. Satpal Khattar as the respected guest of honor. The key objective of Artha Forum is to bring the relevance of ancient Vedic wisdom into modern day business. It endeavors to bring subject matter experts from the world of spirituality and from the world of business to come together and exchange views on the applicability of spiritual knowledge for addressing some of the contemporary issues and challenges. Spirituality and sustainable capitalism is an example of that. Before we start today's event, I'll just ask Rajiv to come up to the stage for a couple of minutes and give a little bit more background about Artha Forum. Rajiv is an extremely successful businessman and a philanthropist to the core. But most importantly, he has imbibed the principle of giving back as a core objective of his business. Artha Forum is his brainchild, and I request Rajiv to come up and just tell us a little bit more about the forum. Thank you.
His Holiness Bhakti Rasamrita Swami, dear guest of honor Satpal Khattar, and my esteemed panelists and friends, I will not speak for too long about Artha Forum. You will all soon start seeing, both with His Holiness Bhakti Rasamrita Swami and the panelists, we are still a forum that is trying to evolve. As I, earlier explained to some friends, that we have put together some thoughts and ideas. And as Suman just earlier said, that we are basically seeking to connect entrepreneurs, professionals, business people all over the world to come together and look at the relevance of Vedic wisdom in their day-to-day lives, which is in, whether it's in the form of business or in professional set up that some of people are on the boards of companies, etc. We clearly see, as I have myself experienced, that there is a big need to have deep spirituality even in business. And all of us tend to think of spirituality as something that we need to practice at home. But I can just tell you from experience that wherever we've had these events, even though we have a very simple logical message that, can business be done in a different way? We have such great examples right from Tata's Azim Premji to Warren Buffett, Bill Gates, and so many others. But in these forums, when we merely talk about, giving back, it doesn't touch people's hearts. And what I've seen that whenever in any of our forums, we've had like Bhakti Rasamrita Swami, we've had other speakers like Bhaktacharya Swami. Whenever we've had deep spiritualists who come to these forums and present exactly the same message, it touches people's hearts, and that's the journey that we've seen so far. These are the various events. We started in 2012 at Govardhan Eco Village. Mr. Rishikesh Mafatlal there is speaking right over there. And then we've had events in Silicon Valley. We've also had an event in Thai. And Thai is a network of business entrepreneurs, technology entrepreneurs all over the world. And at their headquarters, we had an event. We had a joint event with HSBC in London. We've had subsequent events again in Silicon Valley. And very recently, we've had a very large, we had two events in Dubai. And we have one coming up at the Leela Hotel on the 4th of May in Bangalore. You know, the various speakers, right from Alfred Ford, who came to one of the events, to the HSBC Europe CEO. This was the very first event. Some of you may recognize some names. Rishikesh Mafatlal is there. We've had Lisa Kastra from the US. We had about 60 people because this was the very first event. We actually have at Artha Forum one annual event. We have multiple, as Suman said, this was our fourth Artha Forum event in Singapore alone in the past 1 year. We have an annual event which we hold at a very eco-friendly place called Govardhan Eco Village, and this is typically held in Jan of each year. The next event is going to be in Jan 2016. So all of the attendees and professionals who've been coming to the forums, they come, get together, inspire one another. And the last one that we had in Jan 2015, we had Ajay Piramal, who's, besides being a very successful businessman, has a significant amount of spiritualism. We have Gautam Banerjee on his board, who will even say that how, the goals that he has set for his company are based on, significant values from ancient, from our Vedic scriptures. We had, Dr. Samantha, who's, won a GUSI award. He's, he's been nominated on occasions for Nobel Peace Prize, doing wonderful work in Orissa. We have, Rohit Gandhi from the Reserve Bank. So we had a lot of good people who came to this event to inspire several youngsters. Yes. Of course, Bhakti Rasamrita Swami is there. And finally, you will see people from all over the world. They have, they've been truly touched. And in fact, I have to, sometimes contain some of the, entrepreneurs who have come to this event. And I know a few who, after coming to the event, said that, look, in their next business, they want to include, in fact, one of them, we had to collectively tell him, look, you're overdoing it. He said that in my new business, I'm going to dedicate 75% of my shares to charity. And so people are coming, nobody's telling them what to do. They are getting inspired, and each of them now want to, do their, respective professions or business, where not only are they wanting to be successful entrepreneurs, but they also want to keep at the very core of their, entrepreneurship and business objectives, that, they will try to do something good for society after being, inspired by, forums like this, by wonderful speakers, wonderful panelists, and their experience. So we hope that we can, continue more forums in Singapore, and we're really thankful to all of you for coming. Thank you.
Thanks, Raji. So we'll start the main event with our opening speech by guest of honor, Mr. Satpal Khattar, who is well known to all of you, I'm sure, but I'll just take a couple of minutes to give a brief introduction of Mr. Khattar. The chairman of Khattar Holding Group of Companies, is a prominent lawyer, businessman, and community leader, known for his services to the Indian community in Singapore. Amongst his many accomplishments, Mr. Satpal Khattar has served at the President's Panel for Minority Rights for more than two decades. He served as the co-chairman of the Singapore-India Partnership Foundation and has been in many civic bodies in Singapore in various capacities. He was the chairman of Singapore Business Federation, the director of Singapore Labour Foundation, the president of the Hindu Advisory Board, and is a life trustee of SINDA, to mention only a few. He's the first Singaporean honored with the Civilian Award of Padma Shri by the Government of India. So ladies and gentlemen, please put your hands together for Mr. Khattar. Just coming up, a couple of housekeeping requests. If you have not done that already, please put your mobile phones on silent, and because it really disturbs the speakers if it rings. Thank you very much.
Pujya Swamiji, friends, I'm glad to be here, but for me this is a learning curve. I do not profess to be steeped in values other than the simple values by which I have grown up. My father was, like me, a refugee from Pakistan, but I've been here since February 49, and this country has given me everything, both in material terms and in terms of values. I jokingly say that I'm a refugee, but I came here at the age of 7. When Sanjeev asked me whether I could come today, I said yes, because I cannot say no to Sanjeev. Then, of course, Rajiv came and he brought along some write-offs. And I realized that I had not made a mistake, because this is an important thing. When you talk of sustainability in commerce and spiritualism, on a first glance, they appear to be contradictory values. But of course they are not, and you'll hear a lot more from Swamiji as to why they are not contradictory values. Because if you cannot bring the essence of goodness or good values into your daily life, in whatever enterprise or business that you do, the fact that you are a loser itself for not having those values is not as material as the fact that in long term you will not be able to find peace and satisfaction in what you do. I'm aware, and I'm probably an example myself, of the fact that we think of these values often, but we do very little to make them the values of our daily life. That is a human failing, and we have to strive to get away from that, because if you cannot imbibe in these values and make them part of your life will remain unsatisfied. But a lot of us have to take that effort to make good values part of our DNA. There are many others around the world. It's not an Indian phenomenon or an Indian quality that we need to learn from. If Warren Buffett can put $10 million to the Gates Foundation, which is 90% of his wealth, and say, I'm not qualified, both of you, you and your wife, are better qualified and more sustained to carry this torch, you run it. Of course, they are good friends. Some of us, of course, do our little bit what we can, but we are still reticent about the full devolution of our material, this thing, to leave it to others. We ourselves cannot always sustain the obligation that one must have to make these values a part of our lives. We need to be reminded, we need to learn, we need to listen to a well-educated and reached personalities like Swamiji to take us to that level where it becomes part of our mind and matter. The morality and commitment to truth and high values are an essential part of ethics, an integral part of our daily lives as well, or should be a part of our daily lives. It should be a part of our business dealings. A lot of the people here are very successful in what they do. But that success, as I said, cannot always be a success devoid of morality. And it is important that this morality is injected into our daily lives so that it becomes part of our DNA. I mean, we all have read the Gita, we've read other spiritual texts. Until I was told that I would have to say a few words, I was not sure how to relate the two. And I'm glad I'm here, I'm glad I'm going to learn how to relate the two. So, ladies and gentlemen, I know that we all here to listen to Swamiji. Let me not stand between you and the lecture that you're going to hear, which I hope certainly, like all of us do, will become part of our ethics and morality. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Thakkar, for wonderfully laying down the backdrop for Swamiji's lecture. Just before inviting His Holiness, I'd like to take a few minutes to give a little introduction to his background. His Holiness Vatthira Samrit Swami is a Bhakti Yoga practitioner, an astute scholar of Vedic scriptures, an eloquent speaker, a spiritual teacher and guide, and a community builder. Well known for his well-balanced, pragmatic, and dignified demeanor, His Holiness travels frequently throughout India, UK, Russia, US, and Australia, guiding people from various socio-cultural backgrounds in simple living and high thinking and spiritual principles for sustainable business. Having completed his engineering from MS University Baroda and MBA from Bombay University, His Holiness had a brief stint with the multinational bank. Being a person of great integrity, knowledgeable in the scriptures, and an innate leader, he was attracted to the teachings of Bhagavad Gita, as presented by his divine grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. He found the panacea for the world problems in the time-tested Vedic wisdom. After ascertaining his conclusion, His Holiness decided to dedicate his life for serving humanity at large by spreading the Vedic values as remedies to the present-day crisis. He has pioneered the initiative of reaching out to today's youth and has inspired many intellectuals from prestigious institutions like the IITs to imbibe spirituality in their lives. He regularly is invited by IIT Kanpur, National Law College in India, medical colleges, and many such prestigious institutions and global corporations to address the intelligentsia. Besides being a thorough scholar in Vedic literature, he brings a unique combination of familiarity with the business world and an in-depth knowledge of spiritual and depth of spiritual knowledge. Some of his recent addresses include How the Mighty Fell at the Ernst & Young in London, Happiness Revolution at the University of Melbourne, Dealing with Ethical Dilemmas at the National Law School in India, and the International Seminar on Universal Brotherhood. A nature lover and an ardent proponent of the principle of God-centered, simple living and high thinking, His Holiness is also overseeing the development of a self-sufficient Vedic eco-village, Gokul Dham, near Belgaum, Karnataka, in India. The farm, spread over 450 acres in a serene forest land, is an endeavor to preserve the traditional but fast depleting Vedic way of life in various and its various cultural aspects, like farming, cow protection, water harvesting, horticulture, weaving, pottery, etc., to name a few. Despite his demanding schedule, he continues to travel extensively, giving his valuable association to spiritual seekers around the world, inspiring them in their practices and various community welfare projects. So please welcome His Holiness Bhaktivedanta Swami Swami Maharaj to enlighten us with his speech today. Thank you.
Guest of honor, Mr. Satpal Khattar, members of our panel, Mr. Gautam Banerjee, Mr. Dane Anderson, Mr. Jayesh Parekh, our moderator, Mr. Sanjeev Iyer, members of the Artha Forum, and ladies and gentlemen. I feel extremely honored and happy to be amongst all of you once again after a gap of a year. The last time I was here, I was asked to speak on an interesting topic which the organizers gave me on spirituality and material success. Shall the twain ever meet? And I mentioned last year that this seemed like a contradiction in terms. And the technical term for it is an oxymoron. An oxymoron is a term where, or rather a phrase, where contradictory terms are juxtaposed. It's like saying honest thief. So spirituality and material success are sometimes seen to be mutually exclusive, but it's not a fact. So this time the organizers thought of, again, another intriguing topic, spirituality and sustainable capitalism. And again, the same question comes to mind. Is it another oxymoron? Rather, it seems like a compound oxymoron. Why so? Number one, capitalism and sustainability. Are the two contradictory and mutually exclusive or not? First question. The first area where one may consider this to be an oxymoron. The second one, which compounds the first, is you add spirituality to it. And can spirituality go along with capitalism of any sort? So is this an oxymoron then? My host, Suman, has a 13-year-old son. And when he heard the topic, his immediate response was, how can capitalism be sustainable? And this is a 13-year-old boy speaking. It's food for thought. If a 13-year-old boy can speak like this with conviction, then we know there's something deeply wrong somewhere with the way we practice capitalism. It needs some thought. It needs some discussion. So then, is sustainable capitalism an oxymoron? Is spirituality and capitalism an oxymoron? And of course, the answer depends on how we define the terms. If we understand capitalism in one way, perhaps it might be an oxymoron. It all depends on our ideology, on our conception of what capitalism is, what our conception of spirituality is, and so on. Actually, of course, capitalism as it is practiced today has many, many, as we would say, avatars, many, many forms. There are many shades and grades of capitalism. And as we move on, one finds a certain underlying commonalities in all of them. I would briefly like to summarize the salient features of the prominent economic systems that we have known in human society for the last century or so, and to some degree even before that, before I go into the subject of sustainability, and then further on into the topic of spirituality, and then see how everything is correlated, or whether it is correlated or not. We understand that all economic systems can be understood in terms of two very basic features. Every economic system has numerous characteristics, and it is not the scope of today's lecture to go deeply into those characteristics, and I do not think I am the qualified person to do that as well. But nevertheless, amongst all the different features, one can pick up two features which define a particular economic system and which distinguish that particular system from others. Number one is the question of ownership. And number two is the question of motive. Let me explain. In capitalism, for example, or at least in certain types of capitalism, there is complete free private ownership. And in certain other types of economic systems, there is complete state ownership. So the degree to which ownership is in the hands of private enterprises or individuals, or with the state, or some combinations thereof, would determine what kind of economic system it is. As far as motive is concerned, we understand that capitalistic systems generally have profit as the primary motive. Even though enlightened management thinkers, way back even in the 1950s, like Peter Drucker and so on, have emphasized that corporations must have motives more than just profit. He spoke eloquently on this theme, if I remember right, many, many years ago. However, capitalistic economies generally function on the principle of profit as the primary motive. And even if there are other motives, social welfare motives, in terms of corporate social responsibility and so on, they are relatively secondary. And many times they are done out of deference to governmental regulations rather than from a deep felt inner conviction. And in other types of economies, perhaps, the motive is not so much profit. So we have, as far as the economic systems go, a wide spectrum. And at the extreme right, to use modern terminology, the extreme right wing, we may have what we call the laissez-faire capitalistic system, where there is free enterprise, there is pervasive private ownership, where there is minimal state interference in the economy. There is hardly, or rather minimal, regulation of economic activity that goes on. Profit is the main and driving motive for activities there. Taxation is minimal. This is the laissez-faire concept of the system. And you go to the other extreme, which we call left, extreme left spectrum, which is communism, where practically there is no private ownership. Everything is owned by the state. And the state is overwhelming in its presence in every aspect of life, including the economy. So the state regulates the economic policies, it controls the means of production, and so on. In the laissez-faire system, of course, the means of production are owned and managed by private entities, individuals or other legal entities. And the motive is also individual rather than communal or social. In the communist system, however, the motive is not just profit. Profit may be to the extent that it is necessary for survival, for perpetuation of that commercial entity or that particular organization. But the motive of the communist ideology is a classless society where there is no exploitation, where there is an egalitarian society. So this is roughly what the communist ideology is. You have laissez-faire capitalism at one extreme, the communist system at the other extreme, and then somewhere in between, but leaning more towards the left, communist ideology, is the socialist ideology, where you have some degree of private ownership, but you have substantial state ownership of the means of production, and also a larger say in how these means of production can be organized and managed. So you may have, therefore, a significant interference or intervention by the state, but some leeway or some scope exists for private entrepreneurs. The motive, the primary motive of a socialist economy is social welfare, not so much profit. Profit, of course, again, is a necessary thing, but not the principal motive. So then whether it is profit, a classless society, or social welfare, all through the spectrum, if you look at any country in the world, they will fall somewhere in between. And the terminologies may change. You may have some monarchies or some other forms of political governance, which may have their own peculiar strains of economics. But nevertheless, broadly speaking, we can talk in terms of these two key words, ownership and motive. So cutting across these wide range of ideas, one has many others in between. For example, nowadays you have welfare capitalism, and which is something that is prevalent in many of the Western countries, which focus on social welfare schemes for the citizens. For example, free health care, free education, pension in old age provided by the government, and so on. And so even though the economies in these countries are capitalistic, but they have a strong dose of socialism injected in their policies. So therefore we call them welfare capitalists. We'll briefly analyze them and compare them a little later. And then you have, let's say, state capitalism, as exemplified by China, for example, where the state becomes a capitalist employer. And the state